This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Glad to be with you. Glad to be back with you right here on AM 870. Had a few days off. I want to thank Scott Moore for setting in for me and Jeremy Sampson as well for setting in for me. Had a few days off, so it's back to work and back to being with you. Each and every day here. So it's always glad to be with you. We hope to have Phil Steele coming up, talk a little bit of college football, and then we'll talk with Dave Mayo, who's with the NBA team, with the summer league teams. So we'll talk with him. He's down in Orlando, where one of the summer leagues is going. So we'll talk with Dave and ask him about how the Pistons are faring thus far in the early parts of the summer league basketball. And I'm not sure if the Golden State Warriors are there. I think they're probably out in Vegas, but we'll ask him about that as well and see if we can find out how Draymond Green is doing thus far. But hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Once again, the numbers to call, 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. And our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. So glad to be with you each and every day. I hope you're putting up well with all this heat we've been having. It's been hot. It's been very hard to go outside in such a blistering heat we've been having. But I keep saying it's only for a few days. It'll drop down to normal soon. I hope so. But it's been pretty hot these few days. But hopefully everything will drop right. And hopefully in your world, wherever you're at, things are going well. And you're finding some ways to combat this heat. So we're going to talk a little sports today, talk a little bit of baseball. The Home Run Derby is tonight. And, of course, the big All-Star game is tomorrow. Now, surprisingly, you know, I've always been a big National League guy, but the National League has won the last two All-Star games because the American League was dominant in the previous outings. But this year looks like I would probably say the American League has probably got a pretty good chance to win another one for sure. But that's the way it goes. This All-Star game isn't what it used to be, as we can say, obviously, the All-Star game. And we just look at it. It's really a glorified exhibition game now. That's what it is, just basically a glorified game. So we'll talk about the glorified game, you know, with the All-Star, all the All-Stars, you know, everybody changes with all the trades. Teams are and players are trading, going back from league to league, back and forth. So it's not like it used to be. The American League was one league, the National League was one league, and very rarely did they meet each other before they started having interleague play. I'm still not a big fan of interleague play. But, you know, a lot of people do love it and like it. So for all of you who like interleague play, that's great. For some of us who would rather it be, I know that the thing is, as you know, you just can't go back. So you can't go back to the days when it was the American League and the National League and they had the All-Star game and the players would, this was the only time the players would actually meet other than the All-Star game and the World Series. Well, those days are gone. So I don't think we can honestly say we'll see those days again. That's for sure. But that's just one of the trivials in sports. As you know, college realignment is in. We're going to have a lot of new teams aligning in the sports world. So that's something else that's been going on. So everything is so different these days. So we'll talk about things that are different, things that are changing. The NBA has changed a lot with all the players coming in from overseas into the NBA. It's changed the league quite a bit. We don't hardly have any centers anymore, but we do have a lot of guys who can shoot from the outside. We have big guys who can shoot in from the outside, and we'll hear from about that as well. So that's another. All the sports are changing. So that's the thing that sort of scares me a little bit. We have so many changes in basketball, football, baseball, realignment, and everything. Conference realignment. But the sports world is changing and it's adapting to how things are and how everything is going on today. So that's what we have to just acknowledge, that the sports are changing, the sports world is changing, and hopefully we can all adapt to it, and that it'll still be just as enjoyable as, say, maybe it has been for the last 5 to 10 years or even longer. So hopefully you're enjoying the things and enjoying the sports and enjoying baseball, golf, football, and everything. Everything has changed, that's for sure. Nothing stays the same in the world, whether it's sports or politics or whatever. Everything is constantly changing. Hey, just give us a call, though. Talk some sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. If you read the paper this morning, you saw how Jason Richardson is trying to help his old hometown and getting people, back there in Saginaw as they try to get Saginaw back. Cities like Detroit, about Saginaw and Flint, the smaller towns, they really were hit hard in the downturn of our economy. All the smaller cities outside of the mid-Michigan area. So we'll just have to wait and see how they all respond and if they come back and do it at all and become a good, viable city again in the near future. But we're going to talk now with Phil Steele, and I have to tell you, in case you don't, Phil Steele puts out the best college preview magazine in the whole world. He does a great job. Hey, Phil, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, real good, Earl. Great to hear your voice again, my friend.
Hey, good to hear yours, too. I mean, man, you put out, I mean, it just amazes me. Every year you do so much work. I mean, you must start right as soon as that last bowl game ends.
Oh, no, actually, December 1st I begin writing the teams. So, I start working on all the teams whose season is finished. Because I'm just one guy. I write each other 124 previews myself, and it does take me all the way from December 1st through the middle of May to get this thing done.
Yes, geez. Well, I'm just curious, how do you figure out a team like Michigan State, who's lost, their quarterback, a lot of their receivers? How do you figure that team out for this year?
Well, when I look at Michigan State, I've always been a guy that puts an emphasis on the defensive side of the ball. You look at last year, everybody had Oklahoma picked number one at the start of the year because they came in with so much offensive weapons. But I picked Alabama number one because I thought they had the best defense in the country. And when the season ended, of course, Alabama was that number one team. When I look at Michigan State, I look at that defense and I say, wow, they've got the potential to be the best defense in the Big Ten and clearly a top 10 defense this year. Eight starters back. They only lose 5 Lettermen off the defensive side of the ball. Rate them number 10 rated defensive line in the country, number 2 set of linebackers, and number 15 defensive back. So that's going to help that young quarterback and receiving core, is the fact that they don't have to get a first down. A punt's not necessarily a bad thing when you have that type of defense. And Michigan State, speaking of punting, has my number 20 rated special teams in the country. They've got both their kicker and their punter back from last year, good units throughout, so I think they'll be solid on that side of the ball. Offensively, one of my more disappointing areas of the Michigan State team last year was the run game. It surprised me that they only averaged 3.9 yards per carry. With more emphasis on the run this year with the young quarterback, I think that'll improve, and they'll be probably above 2010's level when they average 4.5 yards per carry. The running back core led by Le'Veon Bell, the offensive line I rate number 13. So I think they're solid in all the areas. The two question marks, Andrew Maxwell stepping at a quarterback. But reports I hear is he's going to be a pretty good QB. He's not the veteran that Kirk Cousins was, but I think he's going to have a good season. And then the receiving core, they lose some talented players, but they get a couple of guys coming in. De'Anthony Arnett coming in from Tennessee. Deion Sims at tight end. There's a couple of what I call VHTs in the unit. So overall, I think Michigan State will be just fine. And when you look at the Big Ten play this year, a lot's going to depend on which ones of the big boys can win some road games against the other big boys, because it seems like everybody plays two of them. Michigan State plays Michigan and Wisconsin both on the road this year. They'll be an underdog in those two games. But I've got them favored in all the rest. So I'm thinking that they could get that 10-win regular season this year. And I've got them tied for first in the Legends division.
Yeah, that's good, because that's the thing. Now that we've gone to these divisions, I wanted to ask you about realignment as well. How do you like all this conference realignment, and how do you think that's going to change the face of college football?
Well, I think, Earl, with the playoff plan the way it is, which is 1-4, 2-3, and it doesn't matter if you're a conference champion, I think that's going to slow down a lot of the realignment. I think if they had said it's only conference champions and only ones from the Big Four leagues, then you would have seen a lot of those ACC teams trying to get into the Big Four leagues. And throughout college football, there would have been massive changes as everybody fought to get into the four 16-team super conferences. But with the current format the way it is, and they're just going to take the best four teams out there, not determined on conference champions, you know, I think status quo is okay. Teams from the ACC have as much chance of making it as teams from the SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, and Pac-12. And I think it's going to slow down the conference realignment a little bit that we've been going through.
And that's the thing, Phil, with all of the conference realignment and everything that we're going through, you know, every time people just gravitate to the big time teams. You know, I think people still will look at the SEC, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and all the major conferences. I don't know. I'm not sure if the smaller teams will get an even break, even though they say they're going to get an even break.
You know, and I do think that they'll have a better chance of playing in the championship game, at least making the top four, than they did with the top two. The reason is there's two more teams involved, and I think some years, you know, let's go back and look at Boise State recently. I think if Boise State makes a couple of field goals, they might just have played in the championship game even when we had two, but I guarantee you they would have played in the championship game had they made those field goals and they had four teams, because people would have said, why not Boise? They've got Kellen Moore. They've got all this talent. So I think their chances of playing in the four-team playoff have doubled. Since over the two-team playoff, there's just two more slots to go.
Yeah, so what about all these bowl games? I mean, do you ever see a time when they're going to start eliminating some of these bowl games? Because I still believe there are way too many bowl games.
Well, I'm a college football fan, Earl, so I enjoy watching Sun Belt games on a Saturday or a Thursday night. So an extra bowl game doesn't affect me one way or the other. I think we're in a free market society, and if it ever comes about where the TV ratings aren't there, the bowls are losing money, that will end up eliminating the bowls. But for the folks out there that don't want to watch 32 bowl games, they don't have to. Just don't turn the TV set on, and they'll see how it goes. But I can see it right now keeping about the same amount of bowls for the next few years.
Yeah, geez. Well, I know in 2 years we won't have the bowl championship, the new bowl championship series, for at least 2 years. So we'll still have this debate. That's the thing, Phil. Do you think that it will eventually expand above four teams? I sort of think that eventually it's going to go to 6 to 8, maybe even up to 12. I don't think people will be totally satisfied with four, because you know that five and six team, they're going to be complaining that they should have been in top four. You know, we're always going to have that debate. I'm afraid of.
Yeah, we will. But the thing is, Earl, we'll have that debate whether it's four and five or 7 and 8 or 8 and 9 or wherever you cut it. Then there's going to be one team screaming that they were left out. I'm very happy they made it a 12-year agreement, and I feel that when the 12 years are up, you're going to look back in retrospect at the teams and say, you know what, a team that really had a gripe about being in the one versus two game was left out maybe once of the 12 years, and that 11 of the times it worked out pretty good. And I think you go back to even last year, there was only really three teams that had a legitimate gripe to say we deserve to play in the national championship game. And that was the Oklahoma State, Alabama, and LSU. We've had years where we've had three undefeated teams at the end of the year. As long as you get those teams in, if it's the five teams saying, hey, we could have been number four, I'm not even going to listen to that conversation, because it could be the nine teams saying we should be number eight. But if the five teams says we should have been one or two and they have a legitimate beef, that's when I think it's time to expand. But I'm hoping we don't get the bracket creep that everybody's talking about. Hopefully we don't go to 8 or 16 teams, because I don't want to see teams with 3 and 4 losses playing in the national title playoff. And I also don't want it to have it turn into a battle of attrition like happens in the FCS or 1AA playoffs. We had a 3-year stretch in the FCS where the third place team in one division of the Colonial League, it's sort of like the SEC East, let's say, the third place team won the national championship 2 out of 3 years because it's a 16-team playoff and because of attrition and injuries. And that's not, in my mind, a true national champion.
Okay. Got a caller for you on the line, so let's go to Todd. Todd, how you doing? Make your question quick, buddy.
Hey, thank you, Earl. Mr. Steele, I know I really appreciate the information you put out there, and Earl's right, you do an exceptional job. But I didn't get a chance to hear. I heard you talk about Michigan State. Where do you have their special teams? I think this is one area where Michigan State has really excelled since Coach D'Antonio's got there, and I just wondered, do you agree with me that special teams – indicate two things: a program's overall depth and the fact that they can play very good players on their special teams that maybe aren't starters, and then I feel it's a reflection on how good a coaching staff is. Teams that have very good special teams have very good coaches and very good depth. How do you view Michigan State's special teams? Because I view they've probably won them maybe 3 to 4 football games the last two seasons. Thanks a lot, Phil.
I have to say I agree with you 100%. It does reflect upon the coaching staff. And I rate Michigan State special teams the third best special teams in the Big Ten and the 20th best special teams in the entire country. And, you know, as mentioned, kicker and punter are both back from last year's outstanding unit. And D'Antonio is a top-notch coach and does a great job with special teams. So I agree with your comments. Appreciate the phone call.
Okay. Hey, Phil, give me a little hint. How good do you think the Big Ten is going to be this year, each division? And who do you see as being surprise teams this year?
Well, in the Big Ten, I think there are five teams that you have to put at the top. In the Legends division, that would be Michigan State, Michigan, and Nebraska. And each of those teams, as mentioned, play two of the other big boys on the road. Nebraska's got to play Michigan State on the road and Ohio State on the road. Michigan's got to play Nebraska and Ohio State on the road. Michigan State's got to play back-to-back on the road between Michigan and Wisconsin, which is one of the reasons I picked those three teams to be in a three-way tie for the Legends division. The other division, the leaders, Wisconsin and Ohio State, I think, are the two best teams, and they're in the Michigan, Michigan State, Nebraska category among the elite of the Big Ten. And I've got Wisconsin. They're the only one of the big boys that only has one tough road game at Nebraska. Their other road games are against Purdue, Indiana, and Penn State, and that's why I've picked Wisconsin to win the leaders division this year. As far as a surprise team goes, I would say look at Iowa, because Iowa's got a chance where if they win their final game of the season, which is home against Nebraska, they could all of a sudden get into that three-way or four-way tie in the Legends division. Iowa's not an overwhelming team talent-wise, but they don't have to play Ohio State this year. They don't have to play Wisconsin this year. And when you don't have to play the two big boys from the other league, they play the easiest schedule of the Legends division, and they would have a chance to be a spoiler.
Okay. Hey, Phil, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. You know, I'm going to call you back. I want to get you on again so we can get a little bit more in-depth. But it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend, and I look forward to talking to you a little bit later on.
Well, same thing here, Earl, and sorry about calling a little bit late today. I was doing a coach's interview, and it just ran over a little bit. So you definitely call anytime, and we'll get together, because I always rate your show as one of the best out there.
Hey, thanks, buddy.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And that's Phil Steele talking sports with us right here. His new magazine is out this year. Phil Steele, 2013, I believe it was 2012, it's called. So we'll get that in, and we might have a few to give away. Usually Phil sends me about 4 or 5 magazines every year. So hopefully I'll get them, if I do get them this year, I'll just let you know when you have a chance to win one of those. Hey, the time right now, 23 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870. WKAR.
Power companies struggled with downed lines and blown transformers after severe storms, knocked out power to millions across 7 states, and left frustrated customers to swelter in a triple-digit heat wave. We're told to expect more extreme weather, and many people who spent days in the dark worry the power grid is not ready. I'm Neil Conan, keeping the lights on. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good afternoon. I'm Scott Pohl. Here's the weather. Today will be mostly sunny, though there is a chance we'll get some light rain and thunderstorms. Our high today, 84. Partly cloudy tonight, the low, 59. Sunny Tuesday, tomorrow's high, 81, and sunny with a high of 85 on Wednesday.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. We come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. And now we hope to talk with our good friend Dave Mayo from MLive.com. He's down with the Summer League basketball teams, so we'll find out a little bit how the Detroit Pistons rookies are performing in the Summer League team. We'll talk with Dave and get a little take on them. And so it's always good to find out, you know, another draft class, so we will find out from Dave, how are the Detroit Pistons young guys looking? Dave, how you doing, my friend? Hey, yeah. Dave, how's it going?
I'm good, good. Watching the Celtics and Thunder youngsters play right now. So,
okay. So have you had a chance to see the Pistons yet, or is this the first day of it?
Well, this is the first day. They play Utah at 3 o'clock.
Okay.
And you can watch the games on NBA TV for anyone who has expanded cable. So all the games are going to be televised, and it's first opportunity to see some guys for the future, Andre Drummond, maybe Kyle Singler, of course, a couple of familiar faces, Vernon Macklin, Brandon Knight, of course, playing awesome days on the team. And then some of the free agent guys and this year's second rounder. So good opportunity to see how those guys look against future NBA players and some current NBA players and how they might meld together as season progresses.
Yeah, do they have a dual summer league teams? Because Golden State would probably be out west, wouldn't they? Or are they all come to one city?
Yeah, no, pretty much there are two summer leagues. There's, of course, the big one in Las Vegas, and this is a smaller event with eight teams. The only Western team here is Utah, the team that Detroit plays today, and they traditionally come here for whatever reason. I mean, it's an adjoining state to Las Vegas. Maybe they just don't want their players exposed to the casinos. I don't know, but predominantly, I mean, Indiana's here, Orlando, Utah, Brooklyn. I don't remember who I said, Indiana, Philadelphia, Boston, and Oklahoma City. So it's predominantly Eastern teams. The only team west of Oklahoma City is Utah.
Okay. Now, when you look at these teams, when you look at the Pistons, they've got a lot of young players. That's the thing. How well do you think some of these players are potentially, they've all got good accolades coming out of college, I would assume that. But have you had a chance to watch any practices or anything like that, or did they just come in and get going?
We watched some of yesterday's scrimmage. We were allowed to sit in on some of the end portion of that, so we saw some of them together. Andre Drummond is a physical specimen. I mean, the first time that you see him live in uniform in basketball shorts, the tree trunks to the legs, the guy's got legs bigger than Serena Williams, I swear. He's just an amazing physical specimen. How that translates, to an 18-year-old playing in the NBA remains to be seen, but when you look at him and you see him a little bit on the floor, you come to understand pretty quickly why, when he slipped to number 9 in the draft, the Pistons were basically obligated to pick him, because he could be the steal of the 2012 draft. It remains to be seen. Probably won't, flourish as a teenager in his first year. He's going to be have to find his way a little bit. That's why they signed the Ukrainian 7-footer this past week, because it does buy them time on the interior while Drummond develops, in case he's not NBA ready right off the bat, which is a strong likelihood. But that's what this is for, to get the Ken Englishes and the Andre Drummonds and the Chris Middletons here and get them a run and find out where they might fit into the plans. Kyle Singler probably has been the standout of the 4 days of practices. He impressed a lot of people, got poked in the eye the other day and sat out yesterday's practice, but he's impressed a lot of people here, had probably the most memorable play of the practice sessions, when he got a dunk in transition in traffic when it didn't even appear that he would be able to get to the rim. So, his athleticism is already showing, and that could be interesting, because if Singler develops at small forward, where the Pistons already have Corey Maggette and might use Jonas Jerebko some when he's not playing stretch four, and Austin Day is still there, it might set up a scenario where Tayshaun Prince could be used in a trade. They do have 16 players under contract, or will have, as soon as the signing period reopens on July 11th. So they've got some roster moves they're going to have to make. They got a couple bodies too many here. Even using the IR, they've got at least one body too many. So they aren't done making moves, but you're essentially seeing the roster they'll have next season in place already.
Yeah, Dave. Now, one thing we know for sure is going to have to happen. Andre Drummond's going to have to become a better free throw shooter, shooting 20% in college for that 1 year. I think he's got a lot of work to do on his free throw game.
Well, what did he shoot, 29% from the line last year? So yeah. I would say you're right. I mean, he's the thing with Drummond, I don't know. That's a big mystery. I don't know how you take a horrendous free throw shooter, and I mean horrendous. It's not bad. It's a major problem because you don't know how he's going to be on the floor at the end of games if he can't close out games from the free throw line. I don't know how you take a guy who's that bad and make him, at least a 50-55% free throw shooter so he can be on the floor at the end of games and his defensive acumen can play a factor when you need stops down the stretch. That's got to improve. I mean, and it's a big mystery. We've seen it with a lot of guys over the years. It's not an easy thing to improve. And his hands are so big, and I don't know if this has an impact on it at all, but his hands are so enormous. I mean, he just swallows the ball up, and he just, when he's at the free throw line, I'm sure it's largely mental, but I think maybe a little bit of it's physical, too. He just doesn't seem to have a fluid flowing motion with free throw line, and it's strange because he can actually shoot the ball a little bit. I mean, he can step out away from basket and do some things, but you're right, it has to improve, that'll be a focus, I'm sure, but it's been a focus before in his life and hasn't got any better yet.
Yeah. Now what about the other players you've seen? You mentioned Singler. How are the other guys doing? How many of those do you think will make the team of those second-round picks?
Well, by their design right now is to have them all. Have them all roster. They've got the two second-rounders still from last year, Singler and Vernon Macklin. And Macklin is the one who's actually not under contract for next year. He appears to me to be kind of the odd man out, although certainly he'll get every chance to prove that wrong in training camp. But right now, the tentative plan, which could change, of course, is to have Singler, last year's second-round draft pick, and both of this year's, English and Middleton, all the active roster this year. So that's the way they're planning to go. I suspect that if they make a move, they'll be more inclined to make it involving a veteran and trading for a draft pick to try and. I just keep looking at Tayshaun Prince and wondering where he fits on the team right now. I've never thought that he was going to serve out the whole 4 years with the contract that he signed before last season. And it appears to me that maybe even as soon as before the next season starts, that he might be the guy, given the personnel they have back, who they could move and clear off another salary from the books for next year. They've already got $22 million in change and expiring contracts next year. If they move him for a draft pick or multiple draft picks, why then they would have even more flexibility going into next year's free agent chase, which is what this is all pointed to. Earl, I mean, when you have 16 guys under contract, you're not planning necessarily and. At least, well, right now, four expiring contracts next year with Bynum, Jason Maxfield. Of course, it's slipping my mind now. Anyway, they've got four guaranteed. Corey McGaddy's an expiring contract, and Austin Day, that's the other one. When you have four guaranteed contracts expiring after next season, and that's sort of roster flexibility freeing up, and you have too many players on this year's team, and the opportunity perhaps to move Prince and free up another $7+ million for next year's free agent period. These moves are all being made with an eye towards summer of 2013. That's what it's all about. Not to suggest they're not, going to try and maximize whatever they can get out of this coming season, but it's next year where all of this, the Ben Gordon trade, the four expiring contracts, the potential to trade Tayshaun Prince in the offseason or before the trade deadline, all of this is being made All these moves are being made with an eye towards the financial flexibility that it'll give them next summer.
You know, Dave, Detroit has never been one of the places where free agents like to go. I mean, we know Ben Gordon and the other came to Detroit just because they got a bigger contract. So do you think that players would be willing to, or at least some players who are available, might be willing to come this way?
Well, I think given the financial flexibility that Detroit's going to have, it'll probably be a fairly attractive free agent destination. You're right. It's not Orlando. It's not New York. It's not Los Angeles. It's not Chicago. It's not one of those big markets that free agents tend to gravitate to when they believe they can win a championship in one of those locations. So, it's not an easy sell. Detroit's not an easy sell. But that kind of financial flexibility translates regardless. And so I think, if a free agent looks at this team next summer and thinks that it's approved enough to make it an attractive destination and a possibility of helping turn the franchise around, then I think it'd be a little bit easier sell maybe than it has been in years past when, the Pistons were locked into contracts. And obviously over the last 3 years were in a trade moratorium and just had their hands bound by the whole ownership transition. Those shackles are off now. They're free to make moves. Dumars is a good salesman, so they're back in business, and I don't think it'll be nearly as hard to sell as it's been in the recent past.
Okay. Hey, what do you think about our newest version of the Dream Team? What do you think about the team going to the Olympics?
I don't think anybody can touch them. I don't know how you deal with that. I saw that they completed the roster with Iguodala and Harden the other day, which I thought were good decisions. I know there was a lot of sentiment that people would have maybe liked to have seen Anthony Davis on that team, and I'm certain he could have contributed. But, you're trying to win the Olympics. You want your best veterans out there. They went with the best veterans they had. Even with the guys who pulled out of the games, the only team really, to me, internationally that looks like it can compete with the U.S. team is Spain, with the Gasols and Serge Ibaka and the various NBA players on that team. That's the only team that can be remotely competitive with the U.S. team, in my estimation, and They'd have to play a perfect game.
Yeah. It seems, Dave, that, we see that the players are getting better. The overseas players who are always coming over here, they're getting better. I don't know if that translates for a team because all these guys play in different leagues and playing all over. So I'm not sure how good they'll be as a team together because a lot of them don't really play for their country's team.
You're talking about the foreign players. Yeah. And I guess the same in a lot of cases holds true for the U.S. players. I mean, they don't play together either. So, foreign teams or international teams are kind of a cobbled together, bootstrapped together endeavor in the first place, where you just expect talent to trump cohesiveness. And typically, when you have as much as the U.S. has, it does just that. So, and a lot of these guys, like Spain, when there's an international competition, these guys are not unaccustomed to playing together completely, especially when you get a team that's got a lot of guys with a lot of international experience. They're not completely foreign to each other. So, to think that they could get together and things start to come together quickly in practice and that they, have a feel for each other right off the bat is not that far-fetched. It can be in some instances. I think even the U.S. team probably faces more of those problems than most international teams because, they really don't get the preeminent guys together except for basically this occasion and to some extent the World Championships. But it's really only every 4 years that you get the very best American players together like this, so it's not like they spend a lot of time working together in advance of the Olympics, and yet, hey, every NBA team runs the same plays. The international rules obviously have a little effect. They're a little bit different, but once you guys get together, they're professional players that play two games a year, and this stuff comes second nature to a lot of them.
Yeah, Dave, as you know, you're one of the few people that I can talk boxing with. We don't have a lot of company to talk boxing with in our business. But I just want to know, did you have a chance to see that Nonito Donaire fight when he knocked down the big 6'1" South African this past weekend?
I saw a little bit of it. I saw the Pavlik fight before it, and I saw a little bit of the Donaire fight. I didn't see the end of it because it became kind of apparent that the other guy didn't have a pop.
Right, he didn't.
He didn't have the punch power to hang in there with Donaire. I have Donaire in my top 10 pound for pound and have for quite some time now. I mean, I think he's a hell of a fighter. Bang a little bit, boxing skills, he has a lot going for him.
Yeah. Do you think that we're still going to have a Pacquiao and Mayweather fight? I mean, I still hear little rumblings about it. Do you think that could happen still?
Oh, absolutely. I think Pacquiao Mayweather is more likely now that Pacquiao's lost the fight than it was before when they were on kind of an even keel and Pacquiao won at 50-50 and some of the things that were involved in that negotiation. That, as we've discussed before, in no way, shape, or form, from a financial perspective, from a marketing perspective, from a pay-per-view sales perspective, does Manny Pacquiao deserve 50-50 with Mayweather? It's just he didn't sell even before the Bradley fight. He was a big seller, but he was a clear number two. He was the clear number two in boxing. Now that he's lost and maybe devalued from a negotiation standpoint, it might actually be easier to make that fight because he can't command 50-50. And maybe they can finally get to the table and talk a little bit. And, Mayweather's always wanted to fight. Pacquiao's always wanted to fight. I don't think that's ever been the issue. You know, I've eyeballed them. I believe them when they say they want to fight. It's just there were a number of things that got in the way, the drug testing, money, and all of that may clear up now that Pacquiao has to acquiesce a little bit when it comes to negotiation, trying to yield from Mayweather's demands a little bit more.
I think we still wish that they had fought a couple of years ago. Now they're both are near the end of their careers, getting near the end of their careers. We've seen a lot of the big fights, and some of them have been pretty good that take place near the end of their careers. We both can wonder how good that fight could have been if it could have happened 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's water under the bridge, of course. Everyone would have liked to have seen that fight happen in May of 2010 when they first seriously discuss the possibility of it happening. At the end of the day, it may be 3 years later before it happens, but at this point, Mayweather has options. He always has options. Yeah. He's the face of the sport, but he wants the Pacquiao fight. It's the biggest money fight, even with Pacquiao losing to Bradley. It's still the biggest money fight in boxing, and I think that in May of next year, remember, I've always been the guy who was very leery of this, very wary that they were ever going to get this thing put together in the first place. When you've asked me before, I would have said, no, I don't think they're going to fight. I think they very well may fight next May, just because finally all the stars have aligned and all these other external factors that have prohibited the fight from happening for the last 2 years may finally have been mitigated and erased a little bit so that they can get the thing put together. I actually think now, Earl, that by next May, They probably will have fought. That's my best guess.
Okay. Hey, Dave, it's always a pleasure talking with you. You know, we'll get together and talk again soon because you're about the only guy I can call. We can talk boxing a little bit. So it's good talking with you, and I'll talk again with you real soon, buddy.
You too, Earl. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, bye-bye. And that's Dave Mayo from MLive.com talking sports with us, talking about the NBA. And he's down there at the Summer League games and watching the Summer League. The Pistons will tip off at 3 o'clock this afternoon. So if you got NBA TV, you can watch the Pistons play at 3 o'clock. So that'll be a game for all of you basketball fans. If you don't have a feel of basketball, of course, tonight you're going to have get your fill of the All-Star Home Run Hitting Contest going on tonight. The time is 44 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Poet and musician Joy Harjo came up hard. A member of the Muscogee Creek Nation, she found refuge in poetry, in the spiritual, and in a connection with the natural world.
In the tangle of human failures of greed, fear, and forgetfulness, the sun gives me clarity.
I'm Neil Conan. Joy Harjo on her new memoir, Crazy Brave. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Today will be mostly sunny, and there's a chance of light rain and thunderstorms. Our high today in the mid-80s. Tonight, look for a low of 59. It'll be partly cloudy. Sunny with a high of 81 expected Tuesday, and sunny again on Wednesday, a few degrees warmer with a high of 85. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open. 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons, call us up, talk sports with us right here on AM 870. As you know, football season is right around the corner. And Michigan State will play that first game against Boise State next on the Friday in August, August 31st. Michigan State will play Boise State. Should be a good game. Boise State coming to Michigan State for the first time. So it'll be a game that a lot of you will, it should be a sellout game. So I think it'll have a full house on Friday night to watch the Boise State Michigan State game. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. If you're a baseball fan, as you know, you'll be watching the Home Run Derby tonight, and then you'll have the All-Star, the baseball All-Star game coming up tomorrow night. So I've always been a big fan of the All-Star game. Not really as a fan as I used to be, just because it's so watered down now, and since it's been made into basically a glorified exhibition game. I don't know, when I was a kid, I used to watch the All-Star game. I thought I was really watching a real game. And it was played more like a real game. Now, it's not really played like a real game, but hey, it's a game. If you like the game, you'll watch it. You'll see all the stars. I mean, a lot of the stars that were in the National League last year, in the American League this year. You'll see Prince Fielder. He's a changing leagues. And so we'll see how he does it in the American League, representing the American League in the Home Run Derby. So it's another thing. It's interesting to see and just watch some of these teams play. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. We know Dwayne Wade has had his surgery, and so he won't be playing in the course with the Olympians, but he's had his surgery, so he'll be ready next year for the Miami Heat, as he is expected to need at least eight weeks to fully recover from the surgery that he had. So Wade played, and he played through with knee pain, swelling daily. He was going through the treatment in the Indiana series. So, but he made it through the end. So congratulations to Dwayne Wade, and he should be back and healthy next year. That's for sure. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. The wife of former Minnesota Viking Joe Sensabaugh sometimes these things move on me here. Okay, and we'll get, because she was a hit and run. Joe Sensor has been sentenced in prison to a year and a half in prison for her hit and run accident, a crash that killed a Thai restaurant chef last year. So that's Amy Sensor in May on two felony accounts of criminal vehicular homicide. So just another thing going on in sports. As we know, a lot of things going on in the sports world. Let's see here. We're looking at some of our actions. So the National League managers, we'll see Tony La Russa and AL skipper is Juan Washington. They are set that to name their starting pitchers for tonight's game. Of course, Verlander will be the American League pitcher. He will start for the American League, and the National League pitcher, he's already been named as well too. So the pitchers are already set, and we'll see about those coming up here on Sports Talk 870. Give us a call right here on AM 870 WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. As you know, a little bit surprised if you're into the auto racing, Allmendinger Sprint Cup future in peril because he failed a drug test. They're waiting to get back his other sample now, so to see if he's been with the Roger Penske team, but he's waiting that B sample. If that other sample comes up negative as well, or positive, that is, his whole racing career could be over. So they're going to see. They're going to take a big, close and a careful look at that results of the next thing coming up. Well, we've got a new board operator over here today. We've got Alex on the line. He's been helping out some this summer. So, Alex, how you doing, and how have you liked your gig here at WKAR so far?
Earl, I'm doing very well. My gig so far has been great. I mean, working with a guy like you over here, there's nothing better.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you're here and glad you're with us. I mean, you know we've got the All-Star Game. Are you a big All-Star Game, or do you big fan of the baseball All-Star Games?
Oh, of course. I mean, back when 98, when McGuire was a home run champ, and back when Sammy Sosa was knocking balls, even recently, back in recent years, when Prince Fielder, back a couple of years ago, won it himself. I mean, this home run derby, as you know, Earl, has had a series of legitimate historical hitters, and it's going to be a great year. It's going to be great to see what's going to happen with a bunch of new guys coming in.
Yeah, yes, it will. It'll be. I know Prince said he won it last year, so yeah, he's looking to defend it. And interesting, he'll be doing it for the American League this year. So it's different watching these guys that have come over. Albert Pujols is now in the American League, and those guys, it took them a while to adjust the American League to the pitching. I was a little bit surprised that it took them so long, but it took them both a good while to get adjusted. Were you surprised at all how long it took them to get acclimated to the new league?
Not really, just because baseball players, as much as they are, as much as going to a new league could be a little difficult with the DH, regardless if a pitcher bats. I mean, these guys are pros. They really, to me, know what needs to be done in order to be a great hitter. So regardless of if R.A. Dickey from the Mets is throwing a knuckleball in the NL, regardless of Verlander's throwing a curveball, these professionals can really handle it themselves. And Prince is a guy that can hit home runs no matter what. I mean, he's got so much pop in his bat. I mean, he's a big fella. So I think he's really going to be okay regardless of whatever league he's in. And a couple of other players, regardless of Prince, too.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, it'd be interesting to see how they all go. I mean, yes, we know Prince. I guess I'm a little bit concerned with these big contracts they've been getting. I mean, these guys are getting some humongous contracts. I remember when the first one, when A-Rod got that 10-year deal at $250 million, I thought, boy, that's, no one else is going to get a contract like that. But not so many people now are getting that kind of a contract.
Right.
And I'm not sure if it's good to tie one guy up for 10 years.
Yeah, and it obviously depends on the player. If there's a 28, 29-year-old, we just saw with the NHL free agency with Zach Parise and Ryan Suter, these guys are already 27, 28, and they're into these long-term contracts. And back to baseball, as you were saying before, even inking these guys that are free agents coming up this year. You're going to see a lot of guys that are in their mid-20s already looking for long-term contracts based off production. But what we don't see is that when they're already in their mid to late 20s, their production goes down and down as they get older.
Yeah, they do. It starts going down. That's why I say I wouldn't give one of these guys a 28, 29, no more than a five-year, maybe a max six-year contract. Because, how is Albert Pujols, he's going to be 40 years old near the end of his contract.
Right.
You don't see him performing as well. We know he'll be a DH, a full-time DH by then, but you don't expect him to perform as well near the end of this contract. It'll be interesting to see if they try to trade these guys. Do they just outright cut him and just pay him off? It'll be interesting to see how a lot of these teams do near that end of that contract.
Absolutely, Earl. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, even a 5 or 6 year, I don't even know personally if I would be even willing, if I was a GM, to even give him that much, even with 5 or 6 years. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with guys getting older and the injuries that they get. I mean, back in this Tiger team years ago, we've seen what they've had to deal with. But when they had the record losing season, they had big contract guys like Dimitri Young sign, even though he was slumping a little bit. I mean, you can go back and compare guys that have had contracts and what they've lived up to. But, you know, hopefully, and even back, you know, a couple of years ago when we had Jeremy Bonnerman, you remember how he got injured and how he had that huge contract also. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I totally agree with you. That's definitely something to worry about.
Yeah, I mean, I've really been surprised that so many NBA, of the older NBA guys, have gotten good contracts. I mean, Steve Nash got a good contract. Our man Ray Allen got a good contract. So it seems now like maybe the older NBA players are a little bit more valued because, boy, a few years ago, you wouldn't catch a team giving a guy like Steve Nash, who's 35, a three-year deal, and he got a three-year deal. Ray Allen got a three-year deal. It seems like, I don't know if they're doing anything to make sure their legs are just as strong in these coming years than what they were in the earlier years. But I guess it's good for them that they got getting more money at an older rate.
Yeah, that is good for them. And even a guy like Jason Kidd, I mean, he got 3 years. And
he's 39.
Sure, and he's not even as mobile as maybe a Steve Nash is. Mm-hmm. So you look at a comparison of Jason Kidd, who could easily retire in a year or two if the Knicks aren't winning, and you look at a guy like Steve Nash, who's still mobile. Yeah, he's 35, but I mean, the guy's still pretty mobile, and even a guy like Ray Allen. I mean, he took a pay cut, you know, to be on that championship Heat team, and, you know, he's getting older as well. Absolutely right.
Hey, gee. So this is good. We'll be watching these leagues, and we'll be watching the Summer League just to see how much the Pistons can maybe rely on those young players that they have, this year. They're gonna have to give a lot of them some playing time, that's for sure. Tayshaun Prince, I mean, I know Dave was talking about trading Tayshaun Prince, and he could be. He's one of their better players, and, even though he is 29, he's getting along in the tooth, too. So I would probably trade him, but I don't know what do you think you can get for Tayshaun Prince at 29? He's a good player, solid player, but you know, how much would he be on the market?
Sure. Besides that, and besides for what he would be on the market, you got to look at the trade pieces they do have besides him. You look at a guy like Greg Monroe. You look at a guy like Brandon Knight. I mean, these guys are consistent rookies that have proved themselves, that look to have a bright future. But, you know, do the Pistons want to build their team around them, or do they want to offer them with a Tayshaun Prince trade piece and maybe get some kind of a superstar, you know, in a big three model? So, you know, it really depends on what direction Joe Dumars wants to go in, and that's my opinion, Earl, you know.
Yeah.
I personally think trading Tayshaun Prince would be an option, but I personally think if you trade him straight up, you're really not going to get much for him, you know. I think other teams can see that, like you said, he is 29. He is limping, you know, towards the end of his career, and his numbers, you know, he's a better player, but, you know, in terms of consistency and what he's going to produce with his ceiling, you know, it's hard to see with a straight-up trade unless you offer maybe another rookie or a trade piece.
Yeah, that's for sure. So it'll be one that we'll be watching, that's for sure, just to see how they do in the trade market. And, a lot of guys, they have some value, but it's hard to gauge how much value do they actually have to someone else. How much would they be worth for someone else? And can you gauge and get that kind of money since, they're going to be on the market. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm going to be watching that just to see who's offered what. Is there? I know most of the signing, free agent signing and the trading has been done. We might still see a trader tier,
sure,
a couple during the summer, but I'm not sure if we'll see that much. But it'll be interesting to see just how this is going on and how it will play out for sure. And give us a call at Talk Sports with us. Well, we've only got about a minute and a half left, so we'll be coming back at you tomorrow. We'll have more guests for you to talk to tomorrow. I got a couple of things in mind, so we'll get on the phones today and see who we'll have to talk with you tomorrow, talk with right here on AM 870 WKAR. But hopefully, if you do like what we do, come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. We've been coming your way Monday through Friday every day. And, you know, someone is here. If I'm not here, someone else will be here. That's for sure. But we want to thank you for listening today. We had one caller today. We want to thank you for calling. Thank our great guests. And once again, thank our great guest host, Scott Moore, Jeremy Sampson, for setting in during the week. We'll be back tomorrow to talk sports with you right here on AM 870 WKAR. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, WKAR East Lansing. Remember, we're coming your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870. So we want you to come back and join us tomorrow. We want you to have a safe and a pleasant evening, and I'll hear from you tomorrow on WAM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Have a safe and pleasant evening. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.